The date is May 17th, 1995, and we are watching The City of Lost Children. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
That's why you're wearing the black and white striped shirt and the beret and smoking a cigarette. I was wondering about that. Oh no, he's trapped in a box. Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and while Colin is away acting, I am joined once again by our official substitute co-host, the basket of fish to my seagulls.
Hello, I'm Aaron Knowles, and if you want those three special words, here they are. Omelette du fromage.
Whew, you set me all a quiver with that. Speak of your cheese omelette over and over again. Sal de Ben. Pamplemousse bibliothèque.
Merde.
There you go. That's right. Thanks to Bill and Ted's excellent adventure, I will always know how to swear in French.
Ziggy so... pig, ziggy pig.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that goes back to episode 3 on this show. We did Bill and Ted's a long time ago. Oh, boy. So we've got our passports. We've been stamping our passports all over this globe. We've been crisscrossing back and forth. We really did not think of the right flight plan for this. This strange imports month.
Plenty of miles,
yeah. But we're going to see some VIP lounges in the future, I think, though, with all the points we've collected. So, flying all the way from Australia last week back to France. And, so we're back on that side of the world, I guess. We're gonna go back to May 1995 when the movies and theaters were The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain.
That's the whole title?
That's the title. Yeah, that's a Hugh Grant movie. Which is interesting. That title is so long that I forgot to write down a third or a fourth movie. I usually do four movies here. But the next movie I have, subject of episode 113, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
It's a Christmas movie.
Yeah, French Kiss. Yeah, Meg Ryan. Yeah. And, of course, our movie for today, The City of Lost Children, which earned $11 million on an $18 million budget. Ouch. Sorry. That's, I probably want to flip those numbers, I think. Yeah,
Them's rookie numbers.
That hurts, yeah. That's too bad.
Well, like a circus flea with mind control juice that will make you kill your dystopian cyclopean brethren, here's a spoiler alert.
Yeah, that old chestnut. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time a killer flea came after brethren,
Do you know how fun it was? Do you know how fun it was to get ready to say dystopian cyclopean?
Dystopian cyclopean. Yeah, that probably took a little preparation too. But
yeah,
when you wrote that down, you took a victory lap around your office, didn't you?
Dystopian cyclopean, dystopian cyclopean, dystopian cyclopean, dystopian cyclopean, dystopian cyclopean. Nice. That's five times fast.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
It's the easier arsonist. Than toy boat, though. I mean,
toy
you
boat,
know.
Toy boat. Yeah, I can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
this is a wacky show already.
It already is. Yeah. Well, it's. It's a weird experience. I mean, this is a poster that has Terry Gilliam giving praise to this movie. And I mean, if you know Terry Gilliam movies, which I am a big fan of, even the Monty Python cartoons, where you think that every cartoon in Monty Python, every time you saw someone kicking a head around or you saw dancing teeth, that was out of Terry Gilliam's brain.
Yeah.
And he gives praise to this movie where you're like, oh, shit, now I know what I'm in for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is... Whew.
But it was deceptive because the DVD cover looks like it could be a movie about like the Mayan Empire. Whereas when I finally did see the actual poster, it's like, oh no, that fits this movie more. That makes more sense.
It is a like digital designer's nightmare, that poster. It looks
a lot going
horrific.
On.
It looks horrific.
Yeah. Oh, the DVD one. Is yeah. that yeah, yeah. The other one I thought was nice. The yeah, one where yeah, it's yeah. the blue with the yeah. Anyway, so speaking of
with
posters,
the mines, yeah.
Yeah, two taglines for the poster this week. The first one, I love both of these actually. I really love both of these. The first one, "Where happily ever after is just a dream."
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one, yeah.
Right? See? And number two, "Some people follow their dreams, others steal them."
Okay, for a fucking, pardon my language, for a wacky ass movie like this, those are some of the best taglines we've heard.
That's hands down some of the best taglines I've ever come across on this show.
Yes.
Yeah, these, like, I wasn't being facetious when I said that I love these taglines. They yeah. are, yeah, I'm usually roasting them, but these are great taglines. I love these yeah. taglines. As much as the Memento tagline, that was the last good tagline that we saw.
True. Yeah. True.
Yeah. But not very good description. So let's go to Aaron for and see what he pulls out of his ass for a 60-second synopsis.
Jesus. Okay,
good luck.
I wanted to start the 60-second synopsis with an apology first. Okay, I'm going to apologize to Sean for making him watch this crazy ass film. So thank you, Sean, for putting up with it.
Oh, no
it is
no
it
need.
Is all just a French concoction of futuristic tech, circus freaks, and the youngest version of Ron Perlman you have ever seen.
Ever.
You've got a cult of techno cyclops stealing children to sell a mad scientist clone who just wants a dream. You've got his dwarf mother, six strange clone brothers with narcolepsy, and a strong man without his father figure because he got stabbed by an even weirder mugger during an even weirder street show. You've got weird Santa scenes, a weird crying old man, and some thieving children in a city with a bunch of lost other children. And it just gets weirder and weirder. And how many times have I said weird in this? If you can count them all, you'll win a prize. Oh, and I forgot to mention that the talking brain in a green vat machine that they call Uncle Irvine. This movie is more art than movie, but maybe it's a French thing, but either way, it's definitely artistic.
Well, at least they didn't fall in love with the brain like they did in The Man with Two Brains, right?
This is true.
Yeah,
this
but
is true.
They could have. Yeah, So, the City of Lost Children. Like I said,
that's what it is.
I went into it blind because you told me to go into it blind. So that's what I did. All I had to go on was what the cover of the DVD looked like. And like I said, it does not fit the movie at all.
It looks like Casablanca or something.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had seen the proper poster, I would have been like, okay. I think, you know, I would have gotten those Brazil vibes off of it. But I mean, yeah. For me, yeah, I've never seen this movie, never heard of this movie. I have been to Paris. That's my history with this movie.
Oh, let's see.
So, Aaron, why have you thrust this Brazil-like movie, this fear and loathing-like movie on
this acid trip, this LSD journey?
Yeah, why have you thrust this onto my life? What is your history with the City of Lost Children?
I watched this on TV years ago, a countless number of years ago, and I couldn't tell you when. I just remember it being on the Sci-Fi channel, and I remember just sitting down and just being like, is that Ron Perlman?
Yeah.
And then I was stuck. I was like, I love Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman is an international treasure now.
Now, when you watched it for the first time, was it on dubbed or was it on subtitled?
I want to say it was subtitled.
Okay, so you actually heard Ron Perlman because,
yes.
I mean, we'll get to that, but I watched it dubbed the first time and it was a weird experience hearing
yeah.
that voice come out of Ron Perlman's lips.
Yes.
Yeah.
Again, I'm usually going to watch stuff subbed the first time if it's a foreign film, which, again, I did not anticipate this because really one of the first characters I saw in it, or I guess I should take that back, because a lot of times when you see like an American actor in a foreign film, they generally either fail at the language or they speak just English and then, you know, something happened, they'll dub over it, you know, the rest of the film or sub over the rest of the film. Either way, again, completely unexpected to see Ron Perlman speak French in this film. Mm-hmm. Completely unexpected to see him, period, in it. But yeah, growing up, I saw this and I'm like, man, this is just a bonkers movie, from the extreme close-ups to the angles to the coloring of the sets. It's always had this feel of being You ever seen Dark City?
No.
Okay, so that's another one that's a very, like, dystopian, weird. It feels like a movie that's out of time. Like, that's out of its own time element. Because you have, like, this very old, like, you know, early 1900s feeling of, like, New York or Paris or something.
A steampunk type energy. Steampunk,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that also might have been what really caught me in that time frame. That might have been, like, my steampunk era, where I was really getting to steampunk.
And that's one of the things I think of with Terry Gilliam, because between 12 Monkeys in Brazil, you also get a lot of those, you know, the big cogs that are, you know, in steam. And, you know, like, you can see the mechanics of these big industrial equipment machines.
Exactly. It's pretty cool.
Not futuristic, but also futuristic. Yeah.
Like, you get these Borg-like cyclops, and they have, like, their little, like, mechanisms that you can see. So, again, a lot of that just really caught my eye when I was younger, and I just really enjoyed the idea of it. You know, I really enjoyed the mechanics and the story and how they melded just this almost tech, new tech with old world. And I loved it. So I think, yeah, you're probably completely right. Like, steampunk feel is exactly the best way to phrase this.
Yeah. Without the douchiness.
Yeah.
Of some guy walking down the street with a top hat, a monocle, and a fucking parrot on his shoulder. You know, like,
you're going to piss off the steampunk demographic, because they all either are that guy or they know that guy.
Yeah. Well, as a punishment, I'll have to walk around with a curly Q mustache for a week.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. and a stopwatch, or a pocket watch.
Yeah, that's right. I do have a pocket watch. Well, here we go. Let's jump into the City of Lost Children. Let's try to dissect this thing. Because it's going to be interesting. Directed by, we got a double director on this, Marc Caro and Jean-Pierre Jeunet. You're going to hear some basic high school French coming out of my mouth tonight.
I'm already turned on.
Yeah, 2 years. And 2 years later, I guess, Ron Perlman and Dominique Pinault returned with co-director Jean-Pierre Jeunet for Alien Resurrection in 1997. That was the end of their relationship, this Marc Caro, Jean-Pierre Jeunet team-up. Mm-hmm. Alien Resurrection... Marc Caro didn't want to do it because, you know, artistic vision was lost and blah, 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 some pretentious French reason. But it was what broke up their friendship, because Jean-Pierre Jeunet went for the money in Alien Resurrection and made an American film, and they never directed as a pair ever again.
Rude.
No more Coen brothers, no more, you know, Farrelly brothers, no more Zucker brothers, you know, like, just, yeah, broken up. Mm. Yeah. So, produced by Felicie Duterte, Maria Victoria Hebrero, Jose Luis Lopez. Yeah, we get into some Spanish. I think there's some dubious borders crossed when it comes to... I think there was a lot of Spanish in this movie as well. I don't think it's strictly France that we traveled to on our passport here.
Really?
I think we snuck into Spain a little bit. Because just these names. Yeah, Arlette Moss. This is the most producers I've ever seen, by the way. So, yeah, Arlette Moss, Claudie Ossard, and Francois Rabs. They probably all put their name on it just in case they were all called up onto stage for an international film award if they had won something, you know? It's like, we all get to be on TV at the Oscars. You watch the Oscars and, you know, and all of a sudden, like, everyone is up there, you know, there's a guy with a monocle and a top hat and a parrot on his shoulder for some reason. I don't know what's going on at the Oscars. Anyway.
who brought the Zeppelin pilot?
That's right. You can tell it's him by his curly Q mustache. Yeah. And it's written by Gilles Adrien, Guillaume Laurent, Marc Caro, and Jean-Pierre Jeunet. There we go. That's my French. That's my French accent. So,
why would they have this French accent?
So you brought up the I fought in your general direction. So
you English kid nigga.
So to achieve the slightly skewed color scheme, you did bring this up. I guess the actors were made up in whiteface. Like, they were made up very pale, and then the color palette was corrected until they were flesh-toned. That's how they achieved the really weird, you know, like, sucker punch type coloring to this movie.
Where are the woke people to shout from the rooftops about whiteface.
I know. Huh? God.
Yeah.
I will say that as a Caucasian male, I am highly offended.
Triggered.
Okay, so now I was interested when the credits pop up for the first time, right? They're all in French, right? And it lists everybody in French. And I look at that and I'm like, that's a lot of French to read, even if I did read French. Are the French speed readers?
Yes.
They have to be. It was a lot of words on the screen in a short amount of time.
They're just so egotistical. They already know what's coming up.
Yeah. We don't need to know nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't need to know. I know who these actors are. I know who made this movie. The cinema. I really hope this. I mean, your show. You recently posted on your socials like all the countries that you've been downloaded in. we're about to offend some French people.
Yeah. I've already been downloaded in France. I don't know. I had a good time when I was in Paris. Yeah. I'll say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But same. Unlike Japan, France was somewhere where I walked around with my wallet in my front pocket. Japan, I didn't feel like I needed to.
Mm-hmm. It's not honorable to steal your wallet.
Yeah, it isn't. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so we open this movie with a small child witnessing Santa.
Jesus.
And I have this note here where I said, okay, he's doing it to me again. What the fuck are you making me watch, Aaron? Because to be thrown in head first with this wild ass Santa scene, I'm like, what? Why? First of all, why didn't you present this to me in December and say, hey, I have a Christmas movie for you? But it was some weird.
It's what kids dream about. It's not a Christmas movie. I mean, I guess you could, but so I'm just going to, full transparency, I completely forgot about the scene and how traumatizing it is. I was like, I started watching the movie and I'm like, man, I don't remember this.
What the fuck?
I was terrified for the child.
What's with the room full of Santa? Yeah, the clown car chimney that they've got going on. Yeah.
And they're all sweaty and like point different noses, like very pointy noses. And, you know, we are raised as children to recognize like the certain characteristics of like an evil person, an evil villain in a comic or a movie. They're generally depicted with pointy noses and, you know, like kind of
angular features.
Yeah, angular features and maybe a big old chin.
Yeah.
And all of these Santas had like pointy noses. And I'm just like, these are evil Santas. I don't like them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're also sweaty.
Yeah. Yeah. And very, very terrifying. Absolutely. one thing I will notice, though, is that Scary Santa is not black. There were nothing but Caucasian Santas. So at least, you know, the kids are still only terrified of white people.
I don't know if there's, is there any black people in this movie?
Probably not.
Yeah. I don't think I saw a single one.
Yeah, I don't know about that, though. I know it is always disarming when you hear a black person with a French accent. And we have a pretty big French community in our city, actually, because we do have a French university here. And so I have seen that because they're the people that come from, like, Trinidad and Tobago, where French is a major language, you know?
Yes.
Things like that, so.
Inglourious Basterds, there's a, you know, a lot of that's in France, and one of the characters is a black Frenchman who works at the theater with Shoshana.
Yeah. Just always takes me by surprise.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. But anyway, so we, after this dream, this fever dream, then all of a sudden we're thrown into the steampunk, you know, some guy strapped into a chair. You don't know what's going on. And my first thought was, holy shit, it's something about the French. But they really like this Cirque du Soleil vibe, because I have seen Cirque du Soleil shows that have this exact same set. I swear. Yes. Like, it's, you know, Curio was one where it was very much, you know, big gears. And like, I've noticed that there's French sensibilities that, you know, carry through to a lot of their different art, you know, no matter what. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is one of them. Yeah, suddenly we're in a steampunk room and I'm still like, Aaron, what the fuck are you making me watch? But at least I settle into it at this point. I'm like, okay, now I see what's going on, maybe.
So I don't, not to jump ahead to the casting, which I know we're going to get to shortly, but Dominique Pinon, who plays the clones all and like the scientists, yeah. I just, the scene that we jump into outside of the dream, mm-hmm. is that not like the most jarring but realistic, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how. I still don't know how they did it when they just. It's clearly just him, but he's playing like all these different roles, and it's so amazingly done.
Yeah, visually it is stunning,
and yet creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, well, I mean, yeah. Let's talk about this cast, because you actually found the segue that I was working towards. Is now we get into a point where we start to meet some of the real cast, mm-hmm. not just creepy ass Santas. Yeah.
Well, so you got, I mean, we'll talk about Ron Perlman, who he's just named one. He's, yeah. you know, he's the strong man, seems to be a little bit developmentally disabled. Mm-hmm. Just kind of has like the mindset of a young, you know, like a child.
It's interesting because with the English dub, they actually give him like a Russian accent, like just to, I guess, do the French have something against the Russians that, you know, if he has a Russian accent, he just sounds dumber. He's this big, dumb Russian.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe because the circus vibe. I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, though. Now, here's the real question. You've got an American actor that doesn't actually speak French. Why isn't he the one that is dubbing his own English when it comes to the English version?
Right? Right?
Okay, well, I'm just wondering whether that was just me. Okay.
Yes, thank you.
But like you said, the youngest I've ever seen, yeah. Ron Perlman.
And I don't think I need to look up, because I don't remember seeing him in anything. I mean, this is a 1995 film, and I know Ron Perlman's been around for much longer than 1995.
Yeah. But for me, it's like, I know him. He came into my life with Hellboy. Mm, right. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, like Sons of Anarchy and things like that. So I've always only ever known old Ron Perlman.
I just now I remember where I know like him from earlier, but obviously you would not recognize him. Do you remember the old Beauty and the Beast show?
Oh, fuck yes. With Sarah Connor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So that was
he was the Beast.
He was the Beast.
Huh.
And that was what, 87?
Yeah. I mean. I'm also a big fan of his work on the Darwin evolutionary chart, you know, where he's the one just before Homo sapien. You know, like I don't know if you knew about his modeling career, but yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah.
What? What?
No, the for the Darwin evolutionary chart, that was his modeling career. Yeah. Mm. He just. Just the one. He retired the residuals, man. Off
alone.
Of that. Yeah.
Alone.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, you know, like Ron Perlman has been in an insane amount of things, not just voice acting, not just acting, not just, he's been in like video games. Jesus. He's got over 270 credits to his name alone on IMDb. So this man is.
If you've got a deep voice like that, you're in demand.
Yeah. And he's got it's not just deep. Yeah, he's got that like
grovelly.
It's so unique.
Yeah.
And immediately like recognizable. So.
It's good for like if you're voicing a bear or a tiger.
Yeah.
Or
you want to know
or the step just below Homo sapien, you know.
You want to, so one of my favorite roles that he ever voice acted was from Batman the Animated Series. Do you know who he played?
Was he like Killer Croc or something?
Clayface.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll get off my Ron Perlman love train.
Yeah. Ron Perlman is cool shit. I'll definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He is.
I tease because, you know, he's such a big guy that he would be terrifying if you were on
absolutely.
The wrong side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Daniel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they say it in France. But Daniel Emile Fork is Crank, so he's the older, creepier looking gentleman.
The Dream Stealer. He looks like a live action Mr. Burns. You know?
That's a good one.
It's pretty close. Yeah.
That's a very good one. Yeah. He's got over 100 credits to his name on IMDb as well. Nothing that I really noticed or knew.
Yeah.
Judith Vitette as Miette.
She basically retired. She did a couple more movies and then basically retired. And instead, she got into textile arts. So she actually ended up being part of the costume designer in Jean-Pierre Jeunet's film A Very Long Engagement in 2004. Oh. So this Jean-Pierre Jeunet, it sounds like if you worked with him once, he'll remember you. He'll cast you in Alien Resurrection. He'll use you as in the costume department when he finds out you're not acting anymore. So
yeah, you got a boss for life.
Yeah. So I guess Judith Vidae, she's still in the industry, but yeah, no longer acting.
That's pretty cool. I love that when good, like, I guess, what'd you call it? Like good relationships form over a title or over a, and you can keep working with that. Cause you see a lot, you obviously see that a lot in Hollywood and another French director who kind of does the same thing as Luc Besson. You know, he does the same thing with a lot of his, even Tim Burton with,
Johnny
who he
Depp
works with,
and,
Danny Elfman and all this. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Outside of just the actors. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you got, we talked about Miette, Dominique Pinon, who we talked about, who plays like the scientist, who plays the clones.
Yeah, the diver, the clones,
He's got a lot, even more recently doing a Netflix show called Big Bug, which is about a robot evolution, so that one's pretty interesting. And he has almost 200 credits to his name, so he's been fairly pronounced in Hollywood. Jean-Claude Dreyfus, who plays the flea circus,
the flea trainer,
the flea trainer, yeah,
yeah, I guess he's trainer. The flea ringmaster, because he must have a flea circus, right? You gotta use that talent if you've got it. I mean, we're very circus heavy in this movie, so.
That was one of the cool scenes, though, is like when he starts playing the music box and we see we talk about the steampunk aspect of this film. When he starts playing the music box, it shows the internal mechanism that plays the music. And that was just a cool scene to kind of zoom in on, when you do these micro shots of these things. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, very cool.
Serge Merlin plays the Cyclops leader. I was trying to find...
It's Serge.
I was trying to find...
A Beverly Hills Cop. It's Serge.
Oh, Serge. I was trying to find who I don't remember her name. The octopus. The twins.
Oh yeah, the octopus. I've got Genevieve Brunet and Odile Mallet.
Yep, that is it. Yep. Okay. Yep. I should have looked right there. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have those. You got the Le Privé sisters, who are basically like. What would you call it? Like
they're Siamese twins.
Siamese twins. Thank
they're
you.
They're joined at the hip.
And they call her they call them the octopus, and they run the kids and their thieving schemes.
Yeah. Yeah. In this steampunk Oliver Twist that we've got going on. Like it's very, post-apocalyptic Oliver Twist.
Either way. Yeah. It's
She runs the pickpocket crew.
Yeah. Honorable mention would be Jean-Louis Trintignant, who plays Uncle Irvin's voice.
Okay, yeah. And Rufus as Peeler. I don't know why. Is that the dog? Is that a dog? I like shouting out the fact that there's a person with one name playing someone with one name. So Rufus is Peeler. I don't know if that's the dog or not.
I feel like it's
the
dog.
Yeah, it might be the dog. I love when a dog gets a credit because it makes me a little sad that I still don't have my credit on IMDb, but some dogs do. The cat from Meet the Parents has more fucking IMDbs than I do. And I should though. So now you're a video gamer. I figure that's the cast list, right? I don't know any of the people anyway, so except for Ron Perlman. But okay, so you're a video gamer. Apparently this movie is an inspiration for the video game BioShock.
Interesting.
Because from what I read, especially the man with the scuba gear carrying Miette and like the parts where Miette climbs.
Oh, the big brother and little sister. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I would never have linked those two things up.
Yeah, so
that's very cool.
Fun fact for you gamers out there. Unfortunately, I was not a BioShock player, so yeah.
I never played a lot of it, but that's still like a super cool like connection.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there we go.
Well, yeah, so now we got the cast. We know that Crank apparently is trying to steal these dreams. I mean, okay, so I'm full transparency. I still don't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
In this whole movie.
Yeah.
I don't know why the dreams are so important, because I guess because he can't dream himself because he's such an angry person.
Well, it's aging
person.
Him. That's yeah. what I got from it, is he is also a clone, correct?
Yes, yes.
But because he can't dream, it ages him faster.
Mm.
And so he's trying to get dreams so that he stops aging at the rate yes. that he's aging.
That makes sense. Yeah, because so for the audience, the each of the clones, well, I'm not going to say each of the clones, but the clones all basically have their own defects.
Mm-hmm.
So for most of the movie, the scientist who cloned these, like the, I guess we'll say quote unquote father, mm-hmm. the father of these clones,
the original,
he is nowhere to be found. He's disappeared, and he cloned Crank, I think, who was the original, and he basically could not dream, quote unquote, had no soul, and therefore was just aging uncontrollably.
Mm-hmm.
He cloned his wife slash princess or whatever, this perfect woman, but she ended up being like a dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Crank, who was cloned, and then you had the six clones of himself, or six other clones of himself, who were all the same except for they all developed like kind of narcolepsy.
Yeah, and as someone that recently just read all of the compendiums of Invincible, all I could think about are the bad guys in Invincible that are constantly arguing about who's the original and who's
yes.
not.
You're right? The clone. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely see that. That was, that definitely popped in my head.
And I was wondering, at what point are they going to start marking themselves to make sure that they know who's the clone and who's not, right? Like, that's where I thought that was going, but never really quite goes there.
They all seem kind of a little bit, like, dense. You know, not the smartest. So, like, that might have not have been, like, a thing that, like, you know,
think it's a social commentary on inbreeding, you know, the more copies you make without new genetic material, you know. Ooh, I don't know, science.
It was science. So now we have kind of the cast, you know, and then we have I guess now we already have the motivation for why he's trying to
collect children. Yeah,
so that's
He's but, in the human trafficking business. I mean, that old chestnut.
So hard to approach
that. A good old family
that.
Film about human yeah. trafficking. Yeah. yeah.
Thank God for dystopian, cyclopean human trafficking.
That's exactly yeah, what you need to say. Yeah. So we go from this scene, and then we jump to like some sort of street carnival going on.
Yes. This is where we run into Ron Perlman, the strong man who's wrapped in chains.
Now, I will say, like I said, I watched the dub version originally just because yeah. when I'm taking notes and all that sort of stuff, I want
to
make
read.
Sure. Yeah, it's hard to read. So, but I did go back because I wanted to hear Ron Perlman speak French.
And yeah. And what were your thoughts?
He I know he doesn't speak French. And
yes.
I ended up backing that up with, I read some trivia that says, no, he does not speak French, but he learned French for this, or he learned his lines in French. So yes. he is speaking the French, but like he's communicating the same way that I would if I went, like when I was in Paris last year.
Yeah.
Like it was, I can get along with basic stunted French, but that's why he comes across as a dummy, is because he's using very, very basic French.
Yeah.
But he is speaking French, and he's doing a passable job at it. He's
exactly.
Not, yeah, he's you know, not saying bonjour or, you know, anything like that. Like,
Gorlami.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Buongiorno.
Yeah. Or revoir, or, yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Revoir. I would like to order some hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah, yeah. So he is doing a passable job. And so, I mean, I do commend him for that. But yeah, it is very basic French that he's speaking. He's not getting into any translated Hamlet soliloquies in there or anything like that. You know, it's...
He's not conducting any good monologues
yeah.
during this film.
Yeah.
So after, you know, we get to the carnival, we see, I guess his handler gets,
his pimp.
His pimp. His handler, his the carnival
keeper. Yeah, the carnival.
What'd you call it?
The manager of the carnival. Yeah, he's the P.T. Barnum of the situation, I guess. Yeah.
I know they have a title, like they're like the caller or
the
something.
The Barker.
That's it. Yeah. The Barker.
Yeah.
Penn
of Penn and Teller fame used to be a carnival barker. Yeah.
Carnival Barker. Connie's smell of cabbage, Carnies. Small hands.
They do. They're terrifying.
So his manager gets stabbed, and therefore he's kind of like on his own, just him and for some reason, and I don't understand this. Nobody explained this at all. Why is he living with his tiny kid and his carnival barker? But this kid is apparently very hungry.
Yeah. Now this is another one of those like French sensibility things that you see a lot in movies that I just don't understand why it's such a common thing for French movies, but Lolita, Leon, the Professional, why is it that you've always got these inappropriately young girls hanging out with grown men?
This is true. You're referring to Miette.
Yeah, Miette. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm talking about like the little kid, like the little hungry one.
The little brother or whatever.
You got little brother that lives with them. But yeah, he does. He ends up when they get back to their house.
I'm sorry. Yes, I did jump to Miette. I forgot about the little kid. Yeah.
We had a little time jump. Yeah. You know, we're jumping back. It's good. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
We're going to memento action this.
I don't know if I've told you I have a condition. But
oh, don't forget the spoiler alert.
Yeah. Have I told you about this condition?
Go listen to our Memento episode.
So after his barker is stabbed, they go back. You know, they're trying to, I guess they're kind of trying to figure out what their next steps are. And that's when, you know, enter the dystopian cyclopean brothers and people. And they come, they try and kidnap Den Ray, who is like little brother. We'll just call him little brother from now on. And so we see one or Ron Perlman like trying to fight back. They throw the kid in the back of this weird truck. They take off. Ron Perlman is trying to find him, like desperately trying to find him. And that's when he runs into this group of thieving children.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And the group of thieving children are
the pickpockets. Yeah, they've been working the carnival.
Yeah. Safe stealers, safe crackers, like all this stuff. So we find out that they work for the conjoined twins, the octopus.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so Miette is that one girl. And for some reason, she kind of, I guess, feels sorry. So this is kind of like where they almost start the team up, but she's trying to avoid this like connection. She's basically your salty little kid who doesn't want any connections to adults because she probably thinks she's better off.
Yeah. Like Ron Perlman follows her to the headquarters of the octopus. And I made an observation. There's the guy that is eating the meat while the dog watches, right? He's got that whole contraption set up, that whole like Rube Goldberg situation going on to keep the meat out of the dog's reach.
The filch, if you will.
You say filch. I say he looks like a methed out Harry from Dumb and Dumber.
Yes. Or Dumb and Dumber 2 when Harry's just in the wheelchair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, that's Lloyd in the wheelchair.
Oh, Lloyd, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he had such a Jeff Daniels vibe to me as Harry. Yeah. Methed out Harry from Dumb and Dumber. That was my observation. But yeah. Mm. So yeah, like you said, she ends up kind of feeling sorry for him. And so now he's collected a child. So whatever. You don't need to go find your other child. You got this new one. Yeah.
Well,
he's a better fed model, you know. It's
true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
starving kid.
Yeah, he needs that one.
You don't need that.
Did they kill him?
No. He collects them at the end.
No, not his little brother, but the first one that he was stealing the dreams from.
Oh, I don't know. Oh. Huh. Is there a pile of dead children underneath this guy's home?
I mean, quote unquote lost
children. Yeah.
Yeah. Lost has a lot of, you know,
this just got darker.
It did. Dystopian, cyclopean, darker.
Yeah.
So once he follows, you know, Miette back to their headquarters, he finds out, well, I guess he sneaks in and they realize because he's the strong man that they might be able to help, that he might be able to help them on their next job.
Yeah. Because he easily
handedly picks up that safe that they're trying to figure out how they're going to carry the safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
he's now part of the team, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though he's
earned a spot.
Yeah. Even though in the back of his mind, he's still got this whole other agenda on the go. Like when, as soon as opportunity arises to go back to his original quest, he takes it and ends up fucking everybody over.
But he just pushed that safe back in the water. They steal the safe. He carries it to the dock. They start emptying it. Then he just like drops it in the water.
Oh, you're jumping over though. How amazing that fucking heist was of tying a key to a mouse.
Yes. Yeah. I will.
Scattering that crumbs under the door to get it to like, oh my God.
Not even crumbs. They use a cheese grater.
Yeah. A cheese grater. Yeah. And
the glue
it
cheese.
Under the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. To get the mouse with the magnet attached to its tail to pull the key out. Like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, that is some clever heisting.
That's a new mouse trap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there's no boot to kick you the marble down the stairs.
You're just stuck on Rube Goldberg machines, aren't you?
I know. Oh, I love a Rube Goldberg machine. Well, and I mean, there is the big Rube Goldberg-like event in this that like sets a bunch of things in motion where, you know, the dog ends up getting the meat that knocks this over that, you know, like there is a big Rube Goldberg.
It happens a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love it. I mean, why do you think I love Goonies so much? Fuck. That's one of my favorites from my childhood. Rube Goldberg machine front yard. That's why.
Do the truffle shuffle.
Do the truffle shuffle, yeah.
So as you know, we you know they complete the heist, all right? I think he sees the truck that kidnapped little brother and runs after it, and he follows them. And then Miette goes with him. They follow the Cyclops and infiltrate their headquarters, and then they see like they basically see the transaction between one of the twin or one of the clones, the mom, and them basically buying the children from the Cyclops for the technology to help them see. So that's the exchange that goes on.
Yeah. Well, I want to say one thing about those eyes is they're actually branded.
Yeah, Opticon or something.
Yeah. And I think I need to do sponsorship corner. Because, like, really, this movie has basically fuck all. So, always on the lookout for sponsors, product placements, and movies. This week, the City of Lost Children is brought to you by Odeon Records. And that's it. And the fictional Shea Rosette and Opticon. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
For all your Borg eye needs, Opticon.
For all Opticon. Yeah, it sounds like he could be a Transformer. The Autobots, the Decepticons, and the Opticons.
Yeah. It gives a new meaning to like roll out because your eyeball.
That's right. Falls out. Mad-Eye Moody. Yeah, Mad-Eye Moody style starts rolling across the floor. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. There we go. Catch it. Oh, the guy from Pirates of the Caribbean. With his wooden eye.
Oh, yeah. The wooden, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, so they're actually... So during this flop of a what would you call it? Like them... like watching the transaction, like the stakeout, they're watching this transaction, you know, one sees his little brother. He slides down this, I think it's like a coal chute, slides down and tries to save his little brother. And for some reason, Miette slides down also. They end up getting captured by the Cyclops. And the plan is, instead of just killing them, all right, the plan is to take them down to the dock at midnight.
Yeah.
Put them on a plank.
Feed them to the fishes.
And but they put a basket of fishes on the other side of the plank that weighs it down, and then they let the seagulls eat the fish until they fall into the water. Like this
is Adam West Batman level complicated villainy that we've got going on.
I've seen Bond murders that happen better than this.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going with the goofiness of Batman because
yeah.
At least Bond, it's a laser or something.
You know? And sometimes they might work. This one had no hope of working.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah. And they're taking bets on who's gonna fall in first. Yeah. But this is the point where we get the first Flea assassination.
Yes. Happen. Yes. Yeah. Because that was pretty brutal, though.
Yeah, it stings them, and then it makes them go insane. Basically, I don't know. It's almost like a mad dog, right? It's almost like they're giving them rabies because he's even like foaming at the mouth a little bit.
But it's very specific about who it attacks.
Yeah.
And what is the
criteria?
What is the music?
Oh, you know? The music. What is,
How is that a motivator?
I feel like it's a Pavlov's dog situation, right? Like it's trained to follow the music. It knows what each particular dance, you know?
There was no playing of the music when it hopped and bit that guy. The music started after.
Oh. Okay, so it's some sort of psychosomatic trap.
Yeah, for whoever has the juice in them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, okay. It's some sort of reaction happens.
Yeah.
That's science that's way out of any realm.
Exactly. Dystopian, cyclopean.
Yeah. Dystopian, cyclopean, yeah. Science. Yeah.
Science! Bill.
Well, I will say with this assassination that's going on, the point where the guy unplugs the other guy's eye and plugs it into his own so that he can watch himself get stabbed from the perspective of the murderer, like that's sick. Like it was, yeah. Whew. Yeah, that was dystopian, cyclopean, psychopian.
Yeah, when he took the lens off, like he takes the lens off one of these dudes' eyes and like just carefully places like the knife in there and then just smacks the end of it, and you don't even get like the close up. You get like this panned out like far version of this, and the guy just starts screaming. It makes it even like more brutal. It's pretty it's again, I the way that they filmed this was really interesting.
Well, see, a scene like that reminds me of like American History X, the curb stomping scene.
Oh yeah,
because
you
never actually see the curb stomping scene, but people think it's the grossest thing they've ever seen. It's like, no, you see the guy put his teeth on the curb. And then you see him wind up and kick, but you never actually see him make contact. The rest is just in your imagination. And like, it's so visceral in that moment
Exactly. It's so brutally, like in your face without it. That's
your
great storytelling.
Your brain fills in the blanks. Absolutely. Yeah. You don't need to show that. No.
So the Flea bites the guy. He murders the other Cyclops, and he actually, when he's murdering them, he chases them off. So there's nobody really watching one or, you know, Miet. So they're kind of just there. And the guy who is like playing the box for the Flea, he actually rows up underneath and he catches one, you know, Ron Perlman before he falls in the water. But he does not make it to save Miet in time. So she falls in the water. And then we have the point blank, you know, screaming to the sky.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No. Yeah. You know,
but you know, and we find out later that he was actually paid to miss Miet on purpose. So I mean, that was all kind of part of the plan. I have another note. The claws are master. The rescue where they have to like carry him with the crane, that's all I could think of was the claws are master.
Yeah. When he pulls him out of the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the claw chooses who will live,
and then put him through a pretty wild sobering up routine.
We
find out that Miet though is rescued by the scuba diver who ends up being the original clone and the only one with a beard, so at least we know who he is.
With amnesia
Yeah, he doesn't know who he is.
So yeah, Miet is rescued by the scientist who has he doesn't know where he came from. He just rescues things and he believes it's dangerous on the surface. So he tells her that he's going to stay there with him and that he can't. But we also see
Ariel, the Little Mermaid, though. He just likes to collect things from the world upstairs.
Look at this stuff.
Isn't it neat?
I found a young child. She's never going to leave. Some would call me a pervert.
but it's a French film, so no. It's just par for the course, little girl. Exactly. Hanging out with the
Call me the professional, because this is what we do.
Yeah. To be a citizen of France, I mean, you need to know the national anthem, and you need to know that at some point you have to hang around with a little girl that's inappropriately young. Yeah.
You'll be burdened with a young child's life.
Otherwise, you'll be trapped in an invisible box. Yeah, that's your punishment.
Or you have to go work at the Louvre.
The Louvre, yes.
Yeah. So Miette manages to leave the diver's lair, and you know she. I guess I don't want to say she runs into, because there's more stuff that occurs. Like tell him what occurs.
Well, at that point, isn't this where she ends up finding one again, and he now becomes infected by a flea? And where he open hand slaps her.
That was brutal.
Apparently that's brutal. One of Ron Perlman's least favorite moments ever in his career.
Really?
Is this scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to know, that's what I was asking you, because I wanted to know your reaction to that, because I was just like, oh,
that was wild. Yeah. Yeah. It was scary. Yeah.
It looked, I mean, there's few things that you think like look real and you're just like, that looked. Yeah. He just slapped the shirt out of her. I'm going to slap the taste out of your mouth, little girl.
This isn't just, you know, get out of here. I don't love you anymore. This bitch is going to die. Like it was terrifying. And the fact that Ron Perlman himself is a terrifying presence, like it was a lot.
Even young Ron Perlman with the smooth skin and the you know the charming good young looks. He's
and the ginger hair, like
that little French tuft in the front.
Who knew that he was a ginger unless he just is for this movie? But
you know who he reminded me of? Like his haircut reminded me of like a beefed up Tintin.
Oh yes, there it is again. French, right?
French, yes, it's,
yeah.
This so the octopus had stolen that tick, used it against one and Miette.
Yeah, because they're basically just jealous that Miette has like, it's like no, they're the pimps and that's my girl out there working the streets.
Exactly, Yeah, you work for me.
Yeah,
work for me, little bitch. So they steal the tick. They try and kill her using one, but then Marcello, who is the flea master.
The flea master, sure, I like that.
Flea master. He shows up and does and basically turns the tables on the octopus and has her bitten by a flea, which they then start fighting, and I believe they're like killed. They seem to be killed in the burning water, because they're like pouring fuel and everything everywhere, and which gives one and Miette a chance to escape to continue and go and save little brother Denray.
Yeah. And it's one of those Rube Goldberg chain of events that ends up rescuing Miette here. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. I also enjoyed the journey of the flea back home. I thought that was hopping on the dog, riding the dog across the city, and then hopping onto something else. Like, it's like I was really invested in the journey of this flea going home to the flea master, you know?
ant's life too, Bug's life too.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Fiery water, I don't think there's anything more terrifying than the idea of fiery water, because it's like you're either going to get burned or you're going to drown. Like there's no escape from fiery water. Terrifying.
That was my thing. It's like you can drown, but then you're going to drown on fire. I mean, I understand the fire's not going to like come down in the water and get you, but it's not like you have a choice.
You can't take a breath.
Drown,
yeah, you can't take a breath.
Come up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at least if you light on fire, you'll be put out immediately after you dive back under.
Yeah,
but it's like
I'm out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
you know? Yeah.
Exactly.
That's
terrifying.
That is a fucked up way to die, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So just as long as I'm nowhere near fiery water when my death finally occurs, that's it,
unless you drown in lava.
Oh.
That might be worse.
That I mean, that's fiery water extreme.
Yes.
That's Pokemon evolution of fiery water right there is lava.
That's the Mountain Dew code red of fiery drowning death.
just ask the T-800.
Yes.
So, thumbs up.
So damn it. Falgored that bitch.
But so
they go back to Crank's oil rig, and then Uncle Irvin has tricked one of the clones to use the dream machine and basically can't, like, Monsters, Inc. canister of this dream and then, like, toss it into the water,
mm-hmm,
which...
Yes.
I love how it's like, it reminds me exactly of the Monsters, Inc. like scream.
Exactly.
And
yes.
And
then, Ariel, the Little Mermaid, finds it and
yes.
puts it in her trove of treasures.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. The diver, who again is a scientist, finds it. It like cracks open again, Rube Goldberg machine here. Something falls or drips and then it knocks over a hose. The hose sends something flying. Something else falls, lands on a alarm clock, which causes this canister to fall and break open, exposing this dream gas
mm-hmm.
that like reveals to the diver who he truly is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which
yeah,
we find yeah. out in a dream sequence that he is the original scientist who was betrayed by pretty much his princess, who is the short dwarf lady, and Crank. And then tossed out into the water where he, I guess, eventually recovered with amnesia and becomes the diver.
The diver, yeah.
So he is now on a mission to destroy Crank.
Yeah.
So now
they're not going to get away with that.
They're not. They're not. How dare they betray me?
Yeah.
I created them. Now we have two simultaneous missions trying to get to Crank's or the scientist's oil rig, which is where they're headquartered. Right, we got Miette and one getting there to rescue little brother and the kids, and we got the scientist who's going there to basically now decides that he's going to blow the whole damn thing up and end it.
The siege on the Dream Tower.
The siege.
Oh, I have a note here that says I don't quite know why they needed the map to the minefield because all the mines are floating. It's not like they're hard to navigate around. Yeah, the guy that had the Chinese restaurant guy that had the tattoo of the map on his chest. Yeah, I've jumped over that part. This was a weird movie. Like, it's hard to get into all the crevices of this movie. That's for
exactly.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, them landing on it makes me think so many things from this feel like future movies have been inspired because like them landing on this thing, it feels like Batman Forever.
Yes.
The ending of that, you know, like the Rocky Island, but it's a big metal tower that this
Holy
building
rusted
that makes
metal,
no
Batman.
Sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you just say? This metal. It's rusted and full of
rusted
holes.
Rusted and yeah.
Oh boy. But so we've got the siege on the Dream Tower. Going to take out some clones.
Yeah,
it's the real attack of the clones right here.
The one of the weirdest things is like he sends Miette into the guts of this oil rig
mm-hmm.
and the only like way to keep her safe for some reason is he gives her a piece of string from his sweater and says, you know, like basically this is how you'll find your way back, this is your lead. So he ties it around her, sends her into the guts of this the bowels of this oil rig.
I could think about, by the way, was our episode that we recorded a couple weeks ago where you started singing Weezer's Sweater Song.
Yeah.
And I messed with you pretending that I didn't know what you were talking about.
Yes.
And then here we go, you know. Yeah, if you want to destroy my sweater,
hold the string as I
walk away. Yep.
So. But yeah, like, and it turns into almost like it's at one point he just like the string ends and he's left there with his like just sleeves and like a collar.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch School of Rock? Do you remember at the end when they're doing the actual Battle of the Bands and that one guy is wearing like the leather sleeves with the collar and there's like no chest or back?
Yeah.
That's exactly the same outfit, just one's knit.
Yep. Well, I mean, I've seen this Looney Tunes cartoon as well. I mean, you know, it's the same sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Needless to say, she kind of gets lost because, you know, the string runs out and she's on her own. So it kind of gets like, I don't know, she kind of gets lost and then he starts being attacked by the clones and then, you know, kind of being forced. So, okay.
Yeah, which Greek god was it that had, or Greek demigod that had to go into the labyrinth? Was it like Theseus? You know, it's the same sort of thing. Yeah, the thread runs out. Uh-oh. Now what? I'm going to get lost.
So I rewatched this a couple of times. Like, I rewound it, and I feel like I missed something because there's a weird... Okay. When he is, like, dealing with the clones, he basically, like, just disappears. So Ron Perlman's character kind of disappears, at least from what I saw. Maybe my thing was... But, like, later on, the next time that I see Ron Perlman's character, he's up in this bird's nest.
Okay, yeah.
So well, I feel like I missed something.
Well, he went to find the other guy. I didn't keep detailed enough notes, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. Yeah, I've got, they're trying to infiltrate the building and the string. I thought of the Weezer song. The giant staircase organ warning system is great, is my next note. And then to save the child, she has to go inside the dream. So that's kind of where all my notes jump around to. I haven't been tracking him either. And I think it was long enough ago that I watched this movie that maybe I don't know.
Yeah. I'm telling you, like, I rewatched this like 3 times, and at one point Ron Perlman just disappears, and the next time that we see him is when he's climbing up to plant the bombs. I'm just like, why is he in this nest? He's like laying like
oh, it, that's what it, at one point he was climbing.
Did he fall?
I think he fell. Yes. I'm trying to remember why, though. Like, did a bird swoop at him or something? There was a scene where he climbed and he fell, but he ended up landing in the bird's nest because as the diver's climbing up, he sees him sitting there.
Yeah. He's like covered in poop and he's like laying in this nest. And like, for some reason, the version that I watched did not have that.
Yes, I completely blanked on that. Yeah, I forget why he fell, but there was something that... Oh, because he was hanging on and someone was prying his fingers off, I thought.
It was probably some of the clones or something.
Or it was like a rat, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. Who fucking knows, right? It was probably one of the clones, yeah. But yeah, he fell, but he ended up landing in the bird's nest. So I guess
good. I'm glad. That wraps it up nicely for me. Okay. I was concerned about that.
Took me a while to get my mind back there. Yeah, yeah.
I watch it like I kept rewinding it. I'm like, I have to be missing something here.
Yeah.
So this thing bounced around so much. I feel like I must have missed some scenes, but the diver goes up and he like straps himself. We didn't even talk about how he harpoons the princess that he created.
Oh yeah.
The dwarf.
Oh, when he who it was that knocked him off. Yeah. It was the princess that pried his fingers off. Yeah. She was the end to him.
Ah, got it.
Well, except he landed in the bird's nest. So
But she gets harpooned in the stomach by the scientist, and then he goes and starts like planting the bombs, and then he runs into Miet, and the one are like, oh, what about the children? So he's like, yeah, we got to rescue the children. And then as you said a few minutes ago, Miet finds the dream room with Crank, and the only way to get little brother out and get the kids out of you know that is to switch places with the kid.
Yeah, and Uncle Irving did the rescue at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the brain guides her through this process of going into the dreams. And
That whole scene where, like, Uncle Irvine is, like, talking her into this, like, it just felt really skeevy and really, like, almost like Uncle Irvine was evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just had this weird, like, vibe to it, so. Yeah.
What's your real plan? You're going to steal exactly. her body, aren't you, Uncle Irvine?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the dream world, she runs into Crank and makes a deal with him to replace the boy. And then Miet uses her imagination or something. Like, she basically, now we have elements of Freddy Krueger, Dream Master, going on.
Yeah, because, like, the dream ends up killing Crank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's like the Riddler at the end of Batman Forever. He's just sucking all the dreams, too.
Too many questions. Too many questions. That was the creepiest scene. But yeah, she basically like puts him in this almost infinite loop in his brain that overstimulates his brain, and, like, kills him finally.
Yeah.
So Juan and Miet rescue all the kids, and the diver is just, he's going crazy. He's nuts. He wants to blow the whole place up. He's loaded the whole place with dynamite. He straps himself to it. Yeah. And I guess everybody else loads onto a boat and is swimming away. And he's like, I'm telling all the clones and everybody to come back because I guess he wants to take them out also. I don't know what his plan was here.
Yeah.
Because he strapped himself I don't know how he strapped himself completely to this oil rig itself. He's like completely strapped to this thing.
Oh,
and
full suicide bomber. Yeah.
But the igniter, like the plunger, you call it a plunger for the dynamite.
Yeah,
Your basic Acme Coyote versus, you know, it's like plunger is
out of his reach.
It's out of his reach.
Somehow he has tied himself up.
Exactly. Like
that's the other question is, how did you tie that knot in the first place?
No idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then a bird flies and lands on the plunger. It, yeah. So, I feel bad for this bird.
Yeah. Innocent victim. Yeah.
Innocent victim. The bird lands on the plunger, pushes it down, and probably the worst graphics of the entire movie, the oil rig goes up in explosions.
Yeah.
Fin.
Fin. Yeah, fin. That's right. Get to the fin. Yeah. I mean, we of course, like, we get the circle closing on the kid that mm-hmm. burps, and then it
closes. Oh yeah, because he pulls the meat stick out.
Yeah. Yeah, that kid constantly just eating shit. Like, he was eating a candle at one point in the movie. Like,
that,
you know, always burping, you know, Ron Perlman knows. Yeah. Like, that's all his lines were, was burp. Yeah, I don't think the kid said anything else whatsoever.
Nope.
No, little brother, always burping. You know how it be, always burping.
Always be burping, ABP, or IBB.
Well, there we go. That is, I mean... I'm sure we missed so much. It's such a weird movie, but that is The City of Lost Children. Now, Aaron, on IMDb, it didn't make its money back, but boy, oh boy, it hit some sort of class of people here. On IMDb, it scored 7.5 out of 10, has a Metascore of 73. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 80% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 90%. So, like, people appreciate the artisticness of this movie, for sure. I mean, maybe the less you understand a movie, the, okay, that's worth a 9, because I didn't fucking get it. I don't know. But, Aaron, those are just numbers. Like, like a flea biting you in the skull and making you slap a child, hit us with some reviews.
Damn. I don't know if I... No. So Benjamin S. on Rotten Tomatoes gave The City of Lost Children on... He must have watched it New Year's Day. Maybe this was like the first day of his New Year's resolutions to watch like a new film like every week or month of this 2024. Because January 1st, 2024, Benjamin S. writes, "This movie is like one of those strange dreams that lingers with you all day after waking up. It is a crazy theater piece with zany characters, a mystery plot, and an uncanny atmosphere which create a dreamlike style a la David Lynch. So it is indeed not for everybody, but if you like the strangeness, dreamlikeness of certain movies, go for it."
Well, what's funny is I know that when I watched this movie, I also had a very strange week because I watched this the week of the Oscars. And mm-hmm. after watching the Oscars, I decided, well, I've never actually seen Oppenheimer. I haven't seen that yet. So I went and watched Oppenheimer, and I was also struck in the Oscars by Poor Things, that Emma Stone movie, right? And so really, I followed up The City of Lost Children with Poor Things.
How is that?
It's a weird movie. Yes.
I saw the first like 15 minutes of it and then had to leave because I had some really asinine people in the theater with me. So I haven't gotten to finish it, but that must've been like a really weird transition.
It is like, it's weird in a whole different way, but it's also just as weird.
Did you just go and do like, after you were done watching both of those, did you just like go and like do something completely normal? Like the most vanilla thing you could do?
Yeah. I need to go look at my stamp collection now.
Yeah, like you need to even out with something completely sane versus that bonkersness.
Yeah. I think I just went to bed and probably did wild things. I don't know.
It was
like I said though, just a weird week. Yeah, the Poor Things is a weird companion piece to this, but I should have followed it up with like a classic like Brazil or something.
Mm.
Yeah. Just gone all in. Gone all in on weird.
Well, I want to follow that one up with this one from a Jan Monster, horribly absurd movie title, or horrible absurd movie review. 1 out of 10 stars on IMDb. All right. Okay. You have to have a sick mind to love this movie. At least that is what I believe. I was totally amazed that this movie was awarded this high of rating. Yes, the visuals are okay. Perlman in French is nice, but they spelled French. But just throw that out there. What is it about? I did not get a clue. I have seen a lot of Dutch movies like this, but French, no. What is the purpose? I do not understand. I have seen some vague movies along the years, but this is just plain absurd. Watch it to judge for yourself, but if you like movies with a purpose or if you like movies with some good feelings, do not. It is just too depressing. Bon chance. Do not watch it if you want to have a enjoyable experience. That was a painful experience to read right there.
Bon chance. They're saying good luck. That's French for good luck. Yeah. See, I still know some of my French.
Bon.
Yeah. Everything is bon.
And then
Silver Diamond. That's why the Lego movie sucks in French, you know?
Yeah. Oh, because
everything is bon.
Everything is bon. This person, Silver Diamond 1987, gave it a 1 out of 10 stars also. I just thought this one was just interesting. I'm going to read just some of the first paragraph because there's a fucking lot to this one. Okay. My dream was different, they titled this. A written interview caused me to watch this film. I don't remember his name, but he was a Turkish actor. They asked him, what are your favorite movies? And one of the movies he told was The City of Lost Children. The name aroused my curiosity. There was a mystery in the name. At the time, years ago, I was knowing nothing about the film, and I was not aware of even IMDb, did not even see Amelie yet. The story I imagined was completely different. And there is a man who kidnaps children and uses them in his experiments in a mysterious, surrealistic France while the police tries to catch him, or not police, while a woman or man or woman whose child is kidnapped tries to find him. So, like, this person is obviously, like, English is not their first language.
Yeah. He brought up Amelie, which I forgot. I mentioned Lolita in The Professional. Yeah.
Yes. So I thought that this person had actually done a little bit of their homework, but I feel like the interesting thing about The City of Lost Children is the fact that you probably could watch it and without like any subtitles, not speaking French, and still get the same amount that you would with knowing what they're saying. Like, you'd still understand it about the same. You'd still be like, know what's going on. So I feel like, you know, when I read these 1 out of 10 reviews, I think it's just people that don't appreciate like what this movie is like visually. And it's like, the story that's told just from, because again, a lot of cultures, I feel like their movies and their cinema and their shows are based off of a lot more than just the dialogue, where American cinema is very much dialogue driven. And I feel like if you cannot like kind of pull that from this movie, then you're not going to appreciate it as much even with the dialogue.
Well, it's like sense? I said about that Cirque du Soleil feel that it
has. You don't exactly. I mean,
They tell so much visually that you don't have to be able to understand the story from the word perspective. And that must be one of those French sensibilities. I mean, quite possibly. Now, it is also possible that we're finding out that this particular reviewer is just a pedophile, because City of Lost Children aroused his curiosity, right? And then when he found out that it wasn't the movie that he wanted it to be, he's like, fuck this movie. Not enough kid fucking.
Jesus, I'm going to stay away from that one. John P. over on Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 5 out of 5 rating, and I liked his, which he said, reviews like this are so easy. I watched this, loved its offbeat charm, thrilled to the fantastic cinematography. Visuals are such eye candy. Costumes, effects, storyline, acting is all good. Imagine that Wizard of Oz charm meets Moulin Rouge flair. He also name drops this. He gets this. He says, it also meets Dark City, Weird Science meets Brazil Over the Top Camp.
Over the top as in the Stallone arm wrestling movie. Is that? Or
No.
Okay.
Brazil being over the top campiness.
Gotcha.
You know?
Gotcha. Okay. Yes. Sorry. I thought he was crossing multiple movies there. Because the Weird Science, he crossed that. Right. But I was wondering whether it was Brazil with the arm wrestling trucker movie from the 80s over the top.
He means there's like Dark City, which if you see Dark City has like a weird kind of like weird sciencey aspect to it. So
he just happened to name drop two other movies in the phrasing that he was using. Okay.
Yes.
Which is hilarious to me. I thought he dropped 4 movie titles.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is the weirdest fuck up of mishmash that you could have come up with. Over the Top and Weird Science and Dark City and
Imagine if it was intentional though. That would be quality.
That would be very quality, yeah.
But he ends it with, best of all, I went and bought it cheap at eBay, brand new after renting it. Enjoy this delightfully whacked tale. So that's John P., March 2nd, 2022. And I think, honestly, I'm going to leave it at that because that's like the best review that I could read for this movie.
I think so.
Because
yeah,
I think it fits perfectly. And again, I'm glad he brought up Dark City, because I think that that's one, if you watched it, I think you'd get a kick out of it. It's really cool.
You're like, vindicated!
Yes, justified! Yeah, exactly. So,
right on. Oh boy, so the City of Lost Children. I'll admit, it took me right up until the end of it, until I finally got the title. Because, I mean, maybe it's because I wasn't really thinking about the title while watching the movie, because I was spending the whole time trying to catch up to the movie. Yeah. And then I got to the end and I'm like, oh, they've been stealing children. The City of Lost Children.
Aha! Uh-huh. Aha! Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because, you know, for a while there, the story didn't feel like that's what the... But I think lost could also mean just the orphans, you know, they're out there lost on their own, and they're so all the children of this city are lost. I don't know, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's, it's layered. Yeah, like you know, like cheesecake. Yeah. Or parfaits, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
or an onion.
Yeah, a delicious onion parfait. So the with this movie, I mean, I went along for the ride, and I love getting weird. I especially love seeing a movie for the first time. I mean, you know, I have a history with movies like this that I don't mind a weird mind fuck of a movie every once in a while. And this definitely piqued my interest and my curiosity all the way through, that I was there for it visually. I was there for the offbeat story, trying to figure it out, trying to figure out the whole time what's actually going on. But
yeah,
there were plenty of Rube Goldberg machines to carry me through this movie. Yeah. I enjoyed my experience on this movie. I don't know whether it's going to be, I got to see it over and over and over and over. You know, as far as some of these post-apocalyptic or these, you know, dystopian, cyclopean movies go, I have ones that I would lean to more before this one. But boy, mm-hmm. Oh boy, did I enjoy the journey of this one. Like, I'm glad this was introduced to me. And you once again got two new viewers on this, because Tracy watched it with me. I mean,
nice.
She definitely gave me kind of a what the fuck was that, but... She was there for the weirdness. Like, actually, the dystopian Oliver Twist quote is actually something I have to attribute to her, because she was the one that pointed that out in the first place. And I'm like, I'm putting that in my notes, and I'm probably going to take credit for it. But
but you gave credit where credit was due.
Yeah.
Make sure you give her a salute from me once you go see her next.
Absolutely. So I enjoyed the experience. I'm happy with the IMDb scores in the mid 70s. I would happily throw that out there. I don't know if I'm going to go with the 90 that the audience of Rotten Tomatoes, but I enjoyed my time. It was weird. It was even seeing Ron Perlman that young was strange, but yeah. Thank you for this movie. Yes.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for this trip to France.
Let me ask you this, though. If you, I don't know if you have cable television. If you were flipping through the channel one day and all of a sudden you saw the City of Lost Children on one of the channels, would you just leave it?
It depends on what my mood is that day.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, That's fair.
And it would also, with this particular movie, it would depend on the scene that you landed on.
True.
Because even though it's all visually stunning and interesting, a lot of the sets, even like when it comes to the carnivals, there's a claustrophobia to the sets that when you get into a room like the Dream Room, where it's this cavernous weird steampunk room, or you know, or when you see some of these Rube Goldberg chain of events, it would have me going, okay, what's going on here? Why are they tying a magnet to this mouse, right? That kind of thing might get me to stop, right? But yeah, some of the ones where it was just them in the streets, and you know, like him quietly sitting with, I don't think I would have recognized Ron Perlman, that like him sitting with Miette on the stairs, I don't think I would have gone, what the fuck is this Ron Perlman movie?
Him sitting at the bar and the prostitutes like trying to like interact with him.
Yeah. Yeah. And all he's doing is drinking. Yeah. 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 It's, I don't know if I would have stopped for just about any scene, but there were definitely some that would have had me go, they would have had me hesitate flipping channels for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I even think about, like, in this age of streaming,
you know, every once in a while, the preview you'll get for something is just a scene from the movie.
Mm-hmm,
and it can be like when we did career opportunities on this show, the scene that they showed as the trailer, quote unquote, for career opportunities was the scene with John Candy. John Candy is in one scene of this movie. So you get this John Candy vibe off of it. And then the rest of the movie is like, oh, no, this is not the same movie that I watched the trailer for. So it depends what scene they're going to show me in this, that is it going to hook me or not? Yeah. And I think the dream one, the fucked up Santa would have me stop. Yeah. The Santa dream would have me stop.
Yeah. If it was Christmas time, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. This, I feel like, you know, this has been a really fun month.
It has been.
You know, the gods must be crazy being, you know, Africa, you know, Priscilla, Australia, the adventure of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert was amazing. Like I said before, is watching that movie with fresh eyes. I'm glad I got a chance to introduce you to Zebra Man.
See, for me, with this month, with what you've introduced me to, if I had $20 and I had the choice between the Zebra Man DVD or the City of Lost Children DVD, I would buy Zebra Man. I had so much fun with Zebra Man. I loved Zebra Man so much more than this, but I did love this too, though, for the weird journey it took me on.
That makes me so happy. That makes me so damn happy. Yeah. But yeah, it was fun to watch again. It was interesting to see the things that I missed before. It was interesting to see like little smaller, like, details, and even, you know, after going through and watching some other stuff, recognizing some new some people I've seen before. And then also just appreciating again, like you were talking about, like almost the cultural nuances of the French cinema. So I find that to be something that I'm, you know, through experiencing these new films with, you know, a lot of these new films and older films with you, I find myself kind of being a little bit more recognizing these nuances that we're discovering.
It is. So it is interesting. Like, you know, even going back to Zebra Man with the tropes of that, with, you know, zebra punch, like telegraphing your things, like it's just it's such a thing of that kind of cinema. And, you know, like all the things that I've pointed out with this one, where it's like, that's such a thing of French cinema, you know. I don't necessarily see the Australian, what their flavor is yet. I guess I haven't watched enough Australian cinema, but
I feel like it's like a lot, like it's still like BBC. I mean, it's just like BBC humor. It's that dry, like, you know, sarcastic.
The person running in the desert with the flashing light, that was probably the type of thing that is thrown into Australian movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe we need to watch more Australian films.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is, again, it was really fun to watch this one again. It was really cool to kind of go back, even though, like, normally when you're watching this stuff, you don't really have the time to, like, go back and, like, oh, what did I miss there? Oh, what did I miss there? You know, and then kind of recognizing that you're missing something, because you're kind of just watching it. And like you said, a lot of this movie is watching it to keep up with it, because there's so many things happening and the dialogue is so quick. And there's the scenes and the plot and everything is happening so quickly. You're like trying to stay up, you know, with what's going on. Keep up.
And meanwhile, your mind is also wandering because it's like, what the fuck is going on back over there in the background? You know, like you've got a lot of those moments too, where just the weirdness of the movie itself sometimes takes you out of it, because like you start asking other questions to go with the weirdness. Yeah.
And you have a choice of being distracted or like trying to refocus. And that's a fight in and of itself. Like, I just recently watched this show on Netflix. It's called The Guardians of Justice, and in parentheses, Will Save You. But, like, it's like I think it's like 8 episodes. But, like, when they're showing this, like, pseudo Batman characters, like, lair, there's, like, a glass cylinder with a guy who almost looks like he's in like, Crow or Undertaker, like, makeup.
Okay.
And the entire show, whenever they show his lair, he's in this like cylinder. He's like imprisoned in this thing. They never explain it.
Never addressed.
Okay. Never addressed. It's just this guy in this tube. And I'm just like,
there's a story there. I want to know the story. Yeah.
Tell me, give me something. But like, you're right. I mean, this is a very big thing throughout this entire movie. And it's like, and I think that might just be like a steampunk aspect to it, because I know with me, like I can be easily distracted, but like steampunk is all about that aesthetic of machinery and gears and stuff going on in the background that's visually available for you to like get lost in, you know.
Yeah,
it's all about the details.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, like, I remember watching, like, not too long ago, I was watching, like, a behind the scenes of the Marvels, you know, on Disney Plus. And, you know, it got to a point where they were talking about the details on the set of Carol Danvers' ship. Mm-hmm. It's like, these are things you're never even going to see. You're not going to see these Blockbuster video boxes in the background, but they're there. And it's, you know, some of it's for the actors to live in. Yeah. But, you know, when you have something like this where it is all a physical set, and I don't think there is very many matte paintings dropped into this. Like, it, mm-hmm. like they were walking around on those sets, and there were some very cool, that little shack that he goes to across that catwalk, like, there's mm-hmm. some very cool stuff. And so just, they got to live in it. And that's one of the things that's beautiful about this, is it was made in a time where, yes, you are seeing all those things. You are seeing the aspect of knowing how they all work in a way, because you see their guts, but they're all actually there too. He's walking through real steam.
But they have to be a little bit like detailed to the point, because they know that there is going to be somebody these days who is going to take it upon themselves to analyze every scene of every film, of every trailer, of every commercial, like scene by scene by scene, dissecting it. Because if you do that and you catch something that nobody else has seen before, you're going to get views, you're going to get clicks, you're going to get, you know, people are going to give you accolades for noticing something. So, you know, it's,
I wonder how obsessed these particular directors are with those kind of, you know, aesthetics. Because yeah. I know someone like Terry Gilliam, famously, there is a moment in 12 Monkeys, and in the grand scheme of things, it's not that important of a scene, but in the background is like just a whole bunch of different shit on the shelves, and in one of them is a cage where there's a hamster, and he ended up doing that shot like dozens of times because he wanted to be able to have the hamster running on the wheel while the shot was happening. Like, that's the kind of attention to detail nut that Terry Gilliam is.
Yeah.
And if he's complimenting this movie, I'm wondering, like, are these type of guys, if you're making a movie like this, do you have to have that much obsession over detail? Like, do you have to have these Kubrick level obsessions?
I mean, one would think you would, because if you don't, then you get like these, you know, Game of Thrones events where you have a Starbucks cup in the background.
No, that's true.
You know, and then you're hearing about it forever. You're basically turned into a eternal meme, because
yeah, you have a gladiator wearing a wristwatch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was another
one. Sneakers.
Yeah. Yeah. If they were obsessed with the details, then I feel bad for everyone on set, but boy, did they pull it off.
Exactly.
Visually stunning, yes. Well, there we go. I think that's the City of Lost Children. I think, right, we reached the end. I don't think you had anything else to say about this.
They've been found.
They've been found, yes. And then they burp. And there we go. That's City of Lost Children. That's our show for this week. Oh, boy. If you like that show, you know, tell people. Share our posts. Word of mouth is important, because word of mouth, it means more coming from someone else to say, hey, check this show out, than it does for to even look at reviews. But hey, give us some reviews. You know, 5 stars, reviews, that also does help. Just not as much as word of mouth. Tell someone. You know,
or if
you, or do both. Or if you want to be a financial supporter of the show, I need to really start doing some content on Patreon. I feel bad for the one person that is our patron. I don't know. This one, I just, the niche isn't there, I guess, for Patreon. I don't know. I just joined your guys' Patreon, and I can't get anyone to join mine.
Thank you.
I want to hear the grid. So I'm like, I got to join. I want to hear the grid, because the stories that Chris announced for this week's grids, I'm like, I want to hear Aaron's stories about the military. I don't get enough of them on my own. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so if you want to be a supporter of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, throw a couple bucks our way, and then you get a shout out because you're an executive producer, like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast. If you want to have any, if you want to have any, wow, English much? Yeah. If you have any suggestions for the show, if you...
Too much French.
Too much French, that's right. I'm all backwards thinking now because I've been thinking in French. Yeah. Email us. IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. You know, if you have any show suggestions. If you want to be on the show, I don't know, maybe you want to be a guest. Who knows? Or follow us on social media. I finally updated my website, so, you know, go check out the website. Yeah. And I hadn't updated it since October, because it was a whole thing. I had to get an external hard drive and everything for my laptop. It was a whole thing. And so I finally updated my website. And so, of course, I guess, yeah, Colin's show is still going. So, Colin, where's your show? Tell people about it one last time.
All right. If you're in the Edmonton area from April 17th to the 27th, you can find me performing at the Walterdale Theater in the production of The Swearing Jar. I play Owen. Let's see. I always struggle to, like, tell people how to, like, what plays are about without giving too much away. Basically, the story follows a girl named Carrie who's throwing a birthday party for her husband, Simon. And the play kind of waffles back and forth between the concert where Carrie and Owen are performing, and then it flashes back to scenes from Carrie and Simon's relationship, as well as how Carrie and Owen met. So it's been a lot of fun picking up some new skills, learning how to play the guitar. So would love it if you came out and watched it. And if you do, I hope you enjoy it. Drop me a line and let me know what you thought.
There we go, dropping that audio. And of course, a big thank you to my world traveler, the person that joined me on all these trips around the world this month, Aaron Knowles. Aaron, when people want to hear you doing your normal, regular stuff, where can they find you?
You can find me at the Oblivion Bar podcast. Same thing with, you know, I used to like that one. Wherever your pods are cast, that's where we'll be found as well. You know, theoblivionbar.com. And yeah, that's really about it.
You don't want to shout out Shred the Stress or anything either? Is that on hiatus? Or?
No. Yeah. And if you guys also, if you want to follow my nonprofit, it's Shred the Stress, at Shred the Stress on Twitter, Instagram, just about everywhere. And yeah, going to be updating the website pretty soon. We're in the process of moving that to New York. It's getting warm here. I'm done traveling for at least a couple weeks. And, you know, I'll let you guys know how that goes. Just go drop us a follow on those social medias.
And of course, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Strange Imports coming to a month. Our Strange Imports month coming to an end. So there we go. The world traveling done. So yeah, like I said, big thank you to Aaron for these couple of months that you've given us. We don't know what's going on next month. Aaron might be back. Aaron might not be back. We don't know. So we're just going to leave people hanging. So go follow the social medias to find out what we're doing next month. Got a couple ideas in the works. So we'll see.
Leave you guys a little teaser. Just you know, stay tuned.
Yeah. Little peek behind the curtain. We're recording these far enough in advance that we haven't decided yet. So, there we go. Yeah, so there we go. Until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
And I'm Aaron Knowles.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, until next week is actually, and I'm Colin Stewart, but we'll see you next time on I Used to Like This One. Weird outro for a weird movie.
Yes. Fitting. Suiting.
Oh, boy.